Good morning. The reading today is brought from Genesis 48, 12 to 20. The title is Manasseh and Ephraim. In the church Bible, it's on page 54. Then Joseph removed from Israel's knees and bowed down with his name to the ground, with his face to the ground. And Joseph took both of them, Ephraim on his right, towards Israel's left hand, and Manasseh on his left, towards Israel's right hand, and brought them close to him. But Israel reached out to the right and put it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger, and crossing his arms, he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. Then he blessed Joseph and said, "May the God before whom my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, walked faithfully, the God who had been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they be called by my name and by the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. And may they increase greatly on the earth." When Joseph saw his, when Joseph saw his father, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. When Joseph saw his father placing his right hand on Ephraim's head, he was displeased. So he took his father's hand to move it to Ephraim's head, to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to him, "No, my father, this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But his father said, "I know, my son, I know. He too will become a people, and he too will become great. Nevertheless, the young brother will be greater than he, and his descendants will become a group of nations." He blessed them that day and said, "In your name will Israel pronounce this blessing. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh." So he put Ephraim ahead of Manasseh. God bless this reading and his holy word. Amen.
Thank you, Femi. Have you ever looked back over your life and pondered, meditated about it? I read a book recently. I have read other books as well, but book recently I read, it was one of these. It was an autobiography. Not saying who it is, but I thought the man who wrote it must only be sort of about 40. And I thought, that's far too young to write an autobiography. You have to be at least double that, I would have thought. But maybe he's giving time to have autobiography number two or part two. Jacob, or Israel, as he became known, was nearing the end of his life, Genesis 48. There's only two more chapters in Genesis, so you get that idea. And we are told right at the first verse of Genesis 48, sometime later Joseph was told, "Your father is ill." So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him. When Jacob was told, "Your son Joseph has come to you," Israel rallied his strength and sat up on the bed. Was this illness going to cause Jacob's death or not? But Joseph thought, "I bet I'll get in quick, just in case." Manasseh and Ephraim were both born in Egypt to Joseph, but he wanted to make sure they received a blessing from Jacob. And we read in that conversation, when Israel saw the sons of Joseph, he asked, "Who are they? Who are these?" "They're the sons of God that God has given me here," Joseph said to his father. Then Israel said, Jacob, Israel, same person, "Bring them to me so I may bless them." Now Israel's eyes were failing because of old age and he could barely see. So Joseph put his sons close to him and his father kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face again. And now God has allowed me to see your children too." towards the end of his life, because in the next chapter, chapter 49, first verse, you get this. And Jacob called all his sons and said, "Gather round so I may tell you what will happen to you in the days to come." One of my theories is that as I begin to die, I will know when it happens, because this will happen. All my family will gather around my bed. So if you see your family gathering around your bed, you know what's going to happen, because that's what seems to happen. So you can tell, but then you can impart the wisdom of your years to your family. Jacob, he does give each one of them advice. And we read the end of chapter 49. When Jacob finished giving instructions to his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. That's why I want to go. Given all my wisdom out, the timing's immaculate. Don't always get there, but hey-ho. So we read the part where Manasseh and Ephraim, two sons of Joseph. Turn that one off and we'll go into this. And he says, "May the God before whom my father Abraham walked," this is verse 15, "the God who has been my shepherd all my days of my life, the angel who's delivered me from his harm, may he bless these boys. May they be called by my name, the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they increase greatly upon the earth." It's that phrase in there that Jacob used. God has been my shepherd all my life to this day. God has been my shepherd all my life to this day. The eyesight of Jacob is failing. He's grown frail. But he has enough strength, it says, to rally for his grandsons, for their father. Remember Joseph, one time, we don't know about this time, but one time was his favourite son. But he looks back on his life and says, "God has been my shepherd all my life, even to this day." So let's have a quick look through his life. If you remember, Jacob was one of twins, not identical twins. He was the younger of the two. That had significance. Jacob was favoured by his mother. His brother Esau was favoured by his father. Jacob tricked Esau into giving away his birthright, i.e. everything that should have been going to Esau, the older. Jacob said, "Give that up and I'll give you some stew," because Esau had been out on a hunting trip, hadn't got anything, was very hungry, very tired, and just about crawled into the camp and wanted some food and agreed to it. As father, Isaac, was nearing death and going blind, Jacob and his mum tricked Isaac into giving Jacob the blessing, the best blessing given to the elder son, who would inherit virtually everything. Did you notice in the reading that Joseph presented his sons? So Ephraim was on the right hand, no, Manasseh was on his right hand, and Ephraim was on the left. And that's because the right hand in those days gave more blessing than the left. But then Jacob did that. So he blessed Ephraim with the right hand and Manasseh with the left. And if you read further on in history, Ephraim was far more, appears larger in the historical documents than does Manasseh. It happened to Jacob. He tricked his father with the help of his mother. Esau, as you can imagine, wasn't too happy. And so he vowed to kill his brother. And Jacob runs away to his uncle Laban's. On the way, Jacob rests one night in a place he then called Bethel, which means house of God. But he had a dream. This staircase with angels going up and down the staircase. But God speaks to him. He says, I'm the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Joseph, the deceiver, had been spoken to by God. Esau, who played everything straight, it seemed, wasn't. We often think, that's wrong. It shouldn't be like that. God should only bless those and come to those who deserve it. A bit like the man that Jesus spoke of, when he said two people went to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. You have to remember that's not like the tax collector today. That because they were collecting taxes for the Romans, who were their overlords. And the Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give away a tenth of all I've got. I'm worthy of you speaking to me, but you shouldn't speak to him. But God chose to speak to Jacob. Even though we might not have considered Jacob worthy. But he does. So we have to beware of our thinking. We have to beware of our thinking. Sometimes God shocks us by speaking to somebody that, or through somebody that we wouldn't have thought about. So we move on. So at Bethel, Jacob goes from there, gets to his uncle Laban, and he falls in love. Falls in love with Rachel. But there's a problem. He hasn't got any money. He can't give a price for her. And he hasn't got anything to, fall back on. So that's all right. He says, I will work for you, Laban, for nothing, for 7 years, for Rachel's hand in marriage. And Uncle Laban goes, oh, fine. Yeah, great. So he works for 7 years. And the wedding day gets closer and closer. So we read that after 7 years, his love is so great for Rachel. That he says, then Jacob says to Laban, give me my wife, my time is completed, and I want to lie with her. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a great feast. When evening came, he took his daughter, Leah. She was the elder daughter. That was the problem, and she was unmarried, and she should be married first. So he took his elder daughter, Laban, and gave her to Jacob. Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave her servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. Basically, he woke up in the morning and it was the wrong one beside him. So it must have been pretty dark where they were. Because we don't hear about a ceremony, we hear about a great feast, but not actually a marriage ceremony as such. The marriage ceremony was going off that night. He's not happy, Jacob. But Laban says, it's all right, don't worry. Work for another 7 years and you can have Rachel. And also, as that society believed in polygamy and practiced polygamy, you could have Leah and Rachel as wives. And this is what he does. marries his children. In fact, he ends up with four wives: Leah, Rachel, Leah's maidservant, and Rachel's maidservant. So he has children by all four of those. The maidservants were effectively female slaves. God then proceeds to bless Jacob with the flocks, because he enters a bargain, if you like, with Laban. He says, if we have sheep, because he looked after sheep, that are sort of stripy, then can they be mine and you have all the rest? And Laban said, yeah, sounds all right, because he looked at, there aren't that many stripy. In fact, that year, the vast majority was stripy. So Laban said, oh, I'm not happy about this. So he changed the rules every so often. But every time he changed the rules, Jacob still won out. So God was blessing Jacob with these flocks. Eventually, Jacob has to run away from Laban. And he does run away through an incident which I won't go into now. Laban comes after him, and Jacob thinks he's going to be killed by Laban. So he's had one death threat from his brother. He's now having one from his uncle. But when they meet, everything's cleared up. But Jacob still doesn't go back. He still doesn't go back to Laban. He is saying, I'm going back home to where I grew up. There's one problem. He hears Esau's on the way. The brother who said, I will kill you. But that night, beforehand, God comes again to Jacob, and we hear he wrestles with him all night. He wrestles with him. And eventually, Jacob gets a hand put on his hip, and his hip joint comes out. The tendon stretches, so it comes out. But he still won't let go. And he asks for God's blessing. And God says, one thing I'm going to do for you is change your name from supplanter or deceiver, which is what Jacob meant, to Israel, which means he struggles with God. So God blesses Jacob and departs. He's still got to meet Esau, whom he'd run away from. And the meeting, in fact, ends up in hugs and hugs all round. Esau had forgiven him, had his own life, and was quite happy with it. And so Esau and Jacob, they meant their own way. It was all a bit of a damp squid in the end. But then, Jacob, as I said, he had 12 children, 12 boys. He had at least one daughter. We don't read about others. But he loses his favourite son. He is heartbroken. He thinks his son has died. He's been attacked and killed by a wild animal. He then is in an area that comes under a severe famine a few years later, or about 20 years later. And then Jacob gets Joseph back, his favourite son, because Joseph has been actually sold in slavery, gone to Egypt, risen up. The long story, you can read about that in the latter part of Genesis. And so Jacob moves from Egypt, or to Egypt, with the whole of his family. And they stay there. The tribe of Jacob, family as it grows, for 400 years. Jacob wasn't there the whole time. But Jacob, that's just a rough story of Jacob's life. It's not all been plain sailing. There have been good parts, but there have been not so good parts. But he's still able to say, God has been my shepherd all my life to this day. To this day. He had good times meeting Rachel and his wonderful family, his 12 boys and his daughter. The family being saved from the famine. The reunited happily with Esau. Meeting with God in tremendous ways. Not just once at Bethel, but then twice wrestling with God. But he also knew of bad times. He went through the bereavement of Rachel, who died after she produced her second son, just after. He lost Joseph, his favoured son. He faced famine. He faced possible death. He had death threats. In the psalm, when we think about shepherds, we always go to the same psalm, don't we? Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. I apologise for reading it, because when I was growing up, I started off on King James and I went to the RSV and then I went to the NIV. I sometimes mix up the translations. In the middle of that psalm, right in the middle, verse 4, it says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. We have bad times. But can we look back? Can you look back on your life? Doesn't matter how much you've had of it. And say, God has been my shepherd all the days of my life. When I look back on my life, I see a little boy who grew up with a bad stutter. I had one this morning in communion. I sort of went, oh. I was a lot worse. Only my mother could understand me. One teacher I had tried to make me sing instead of talk. She said that would be better for my stutter. Maybe that's why I'm so good at singing now. I don't know. One of the things that used to really affect me was going into a shop and asking for things. You know, if I couldn't see it, I wouldn't ask for it. But that was fine. Then I started courting Sue and we married so that when we went in the shop, I could get her to ask for it. I didn't have to. A bit like a guide dog, really, for a blind. She was a voice for the stutterer. Same sort of thing. Then my father, though, before I met Sue, was made redundant. We moved from Berkshire to Essex, from Reading in Berkshire to Brankery in Essex. Traumatic time for the family, for the three of us. But I met a new teacher called Gordon Cornell, who ran a Christian boys group. Through Gordon and other things, I became a Christian. I entered teaching, still with a stutter. Sometimes, yes, I used to stutter in class and they used to laugh at me. So what I did, I used to make a joke, usually about something about giving Sue back her teeth at the end of the day, and they would laugh with me, not at me. I became quite adept at that. And then from teaching to ministry, another profession where you need your voice. Remember before, in my early days, I rang up a treasurer in another church. I can't remember why, but I was ringing and we had a 10-minute conversation that lasted half an hour because he stuttered and I stuttered. So we were both stuttering and I think we were setting each other off. So we had this 10-minute conversation that went on for half an hour. I'm not sure whether he thought I was taking the mickey out of him or what. But when we looked back, Sue and I did this not long before her death. And we still believe that decisions we made, we'd ask God to be with us. God had helped us. We prayed about things. And we both knew that God had been our shepherd all our lives to that day, to this day. At times it's difficult to see this, especially when you're going through some difficulties. You think God's not there. Think back for a moment through your life. Try to think about some major events that happened that shaped your life. You should be able to see the hand of God in that, even before you became a Christian. God had to move me from Reading in Berkshire to Braintree in Essex to meet Gordon, to have an even chance of becoming a Christian. I didn't know any before that. My parents didn't go to church. Think about your life. Look back. And if you can see God in them, then thank him for being there, for being that shepherd all my life to this day. If you can't see him in them, then ask him to reveal that to you, because he will be there. What about the future? Will God still be there? We can't guarantee what's going to happen in the future. We can only go about what's happening now. But into that future, we know the God has been my shepherd all my days to this day. So why not have it that the Lord is my shepherd today and in the future? To corrupt Psalm 23 slightly. We can go forth with confidence. We can go into the world knowing that whatever happens, God is or has been my shepherd all the days of my life. And he is my shepherd today, and my shepherd tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that, and so on and so forth. Let's pray.